Welcome to the Go Hack Something podcast, where education and technology meet. On today's episode, I'm going to be talking about fixing things instead of pitching them when they break. I'm your host, Will Bushy, author of Wired for Coding, and my co-host, Ross Wickman, is out on assignment, but we'll catch up with him again in a few weeks. He was here last week. It was great to have him back, but as he mentioned, he's a little bit busy with a few other projects, but he's still actively involved in the podcast, so we'll keep him in the loop here, and we'll have him join us here on some future episodes. So summer's about ready to wind down. Kids are getting ready to go back to school, at least where we're at. School is starting here in a couple of weeks. A lot of the teachers have already had to go back. Next week, my kids are going in for some of the preschool projects, things like getting their pictures taken for their ID badges, getting their schedules, things like that. And it's been a real busy summer. I know for us, we've done quite a few events. We've had well over 150 kids attend our different projects between our gaming boot camp, our Hack Sioux Falls, Cyber Patriot, were the three big ones that we did this summer. We also had a couple smaller ones or kind of a little bit more unique ones like the Girls Breaker Day. I taught up at the DSU Gen Cyber Camp. But all in all, boy, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a great summer. Really look forward to having everybody get back into school, and that kind of shifts my schedule around just a little bit. This fall, I've got a few things planned. We'll be doing a code club over at Sioux Falls Christian again, and this will be our third year. That's been a lot of fun. Just really, really enjoyed doing that. So looking forward to getting that back underway here sometime in October. And then I also want to host another Hack Sioux Falls project, and I know we talked about that on a couple of episodes ago, how I want to shift that around a little bit, but really looking forward to doing version two of the Hack Sioux Falls. And that will be something that once everybody gets back to school, schedules kind of get set a little bit, we'll start that again. So another thing I'll be doing is speaking in October at a conference in Yankton, South Dakota. This will be geared towards high school students, a little bit more on the rural high school students, explaining how you can build things and create things and do things, even if you live in a more rural town, and just some of the resources that are available. One of the things that I thought would be neat would be to build something new just for that particular conference. So I'm kind of getting that started right now. I had a lot of different ideas. The one I kind of settled on that I'm going to do for sure, and I might do something else as well, is going to be just a little robot, two-wheeled robot with a little caster on the front that you'll be able to take. It'll take instructions from Twitter. So if you tweet left, right, up, down, or it'll be left, right, forward, backward, and then I'll have a few other kind of secret keywords tied in as well. It'll then monitor my Twitter account, and then when it sees those instructions, it'll then drive around. So then the idea is I'll be able to have that up on stage, and then at some point during the presentations, I'll list up my Twitter handle and instruct what can be done. And then as the students tweet to my account, the robot will actually take those instructions and move around and do stuff. And we'll see. I'm sure it'll get driven off stage a few times. But I just thought that was interesting, starting to combine real world with the digital world with social media. And of course, a lot of the kids already have Twitter accounts and they're very familiar with that technology. But I want to show the expansion beyond it being just a social platform. So anyway, that's my idea. I'm working on that project right now. It's probably 80-ish% done, although the last 20% are the important part, like actually getting everything to work. But I'm not overly concerned about it. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm really looking forward to that. I've got a lot of ideas of what I want to cover and how I want to cover it. So more about that as I get a little bit closer to the conference. And I'll probably share some of the details about that Twitter robot here in the coming episodes. So today's topic, this kind of came up over the last couple of weeks that I kind of kept thinking about it, and I thought it would make for a good episode, but really centered around what do we do with all these electronics and appliances that break? I mean, most people just simply aren't comfortable with trying to fix them. And if you know anything about today's world, you can't find somebody to fix anything. Maybe you're appliances, you can get somebody to probably come fix. Furnace, air conditioner, yes. Construction, yes. But boy, if you've got a device or something small, a small appliance, you're just not going to find anybody. Now, in some cases, you can send it back to the manufacturer to get fixed. But, you know, honestly, $20 shipping and handling both directions, $40 plus parts, you know, might be $60. Most appliances or small gadgets or electronics are less than that anyway. So it just doesn't make sense. And of course, most of these get pitched and thrown away. Hopefully they're getting recycled to the electronics recycling center. But one of the things that I do, and possibly to a fault, is I like to fix things. I love to get in and figure out what's broke and fix stuff. And a lot of times I'll even get things from other people that are broken that they don't know what to do with. So I might salvage them or save them before they get pitched out. I might take parts out of them or fix them, or even just try to figure out what's broken. And in some cases, they're beyond repair. And over the years, I mean, I have fixed, I don't even know, hundreds, thousands of things. Big things like appliances. I know our appliances, they're always getting fixed. I've got a washer and dryer that are probably 16, 17 years old. And I mean, I've fixed probably half a dozen, maybe even more parts. Some parts I've actually fixed twice. And these are common parts and they're simple parts. They're super easy to fix. Like for example, on the washing machine, there's a little door sensor, whether or not the door is open or closed. Not very well constructed, and it does break, and it's broken at least twice, maybe even three times since we've had it. Well, it's an important piece. You kind of need that because the dryer or the washer won't start if the switch is in the open state, which means temporarily you may need to drive a screwdriver in there in order to hold the switch open in order to get it to start. But you know what? Something like that, the part itself is less than $10. It takes maybe 5 minutes to replace it. But if you think of, well, if I had to hire an appliance repairman to come out, it'll be $70-$80 minimum. He'll charge $20-$30 for the part, $100. Yeah, it adds up fast. Pretty soon, it just simply doesn't make sense. So on that one part alone, I've probably saved $300 by fixing it myself over the years. But I realize a lot of people are super intimidated by that. By that process and what they're willing to take on. Obviously, I'm not. I take anything apart, see what's inside. But that's another good example. Now, today with YouTube, you can go on and just search for your part number, and there's probably 20 or 30 videos walking you through the steps of taking it apart, getting the new part, how do you put it back together, maybe even how you test it if it's something electrical. Other appliances are things that I fixed a lot. I fixed our furnace many, many times. There's three or four parts that are just notoriously bad at breaking. And it's not that they break. It's just that they are not meant to last 30 years or 20 years. Sometimes these only have a 2 to 5 year lifespan. And the you know, they'll send a repair person out to do that for you. The part may be $4, but it'll be $120 or more for them to come out and fix it. And if you know what part it is and you know how to fix it and you're comfortable with that, can save a lot of money. You know, another thing, my lawnmower is about 20 years old. You'd never know it looking at it, but then again, 50% of the parts on it have been replaced. You know, it's another one of those devices that is very easy to fix. You can find all of the parts online. I mean, these are things that you can continue to find parts even for machines that are 20, 30 years old. And it's just one of those things where the parts wear out. The wheels have wore out. I think I've replaced all of the wheels on it at least once. There's some other little catch things that wear out that just need to be replaced so that they work correctly. Mufflers, those always seem to rust out pretty quickly. The blade, just different pieces on that, and the spark plugs, air filters, those are things that anybody can really replace pretty easily. But again, it's one of those things where, you know, if you have some basic skills and you're comfortable doing it, you can jump in and do it yourself and save a lot of money. I don't know if I mentioned this on any of the previous podcasts, but a couple months ago, a guy I know reached out to me and said, hey, I've got a dozen hoverboards, those old, well, they still make them, but the hoverboards that were all the craze here 5 years ago or 4 years ago, where he imports stuff in and resells them for kind of a wholesale. And he had a whole bunch that were I think they were DOA. I mean, they just didn't work. So they got shipped back to him. And they weren't used. They were just dead. And he was going to throw them out. And he says, well, hey, man, do you think you could fix these? Or I don't know anything about them. What do you think? And I said, well, let me give it a shot. So I went over, I picked a couple of them up. And I went on YouTube and just to look to see exactly, you know, how do you take them apart? What are the pieces in them? And they're very straightforward. You can buy a lot of the little individual daughter boards that are in there individually and replace them if they're the part that's broken. And they actually have a little error code. And this is something that you didn't know until you get it apart, but inside there's a little error code that'll blink out on an onboard LED and will tell you what it thinks is wrong based on the sensor readings. And so most of them, out of the dozen, actually I think there were 14, I got out of those 14, I was able to get 12 in the end, it worked just fine back to the original. And then I sacrificed the two of them that were used and a little bit more roughed up as parts to fix the other 12. But in that case, there's a little error code, and it would blink out and it would tell you what was wrong. You know, the left sensor board was not responding, or the wheel wasn't responding, or the entire motherboard had an error in it. And it literally was just a matter of going through and following what the error code said and swapping out the part with a known good one. And in that particular case, these ones came from China and they were manufactured very quickly. I had about five of them that had bad or broken wires or connectors. And so in that particular case, there were a lot of them that, you know, maybe you would need to be a little bit more skilled in repair and engineering to fix, because we had to resolder some wires back together, and to even know that that was probably your problem might have been a little bit more difficult. But it was a lot of fun. I spent one Sunday afternoon just kind of fixing almost all of these hoverboards, and it was just interesting to see the manufacturing process of how they put these together and how quickly they put them together. Now, you may be thinking to yourself, man, I could never fix something like that. Well, you might be surprised if you take the part or the product and the symptom, and you go to YouTube and you type those two things in, you'd be surprised at how often that particular problem occurs on that device over and over again. I would say maybe even 90% of the time, what breaks on a device is going to be the same thing that breaks hundreds of thousands of times in those products out in the world. And it's very, you know, a lot of people like myself like to fix things, and they'll post it up as a YouTube video explaining what it is. And you'll be able to diagnose most of your problems that way. And those videos will, some of them are horrible. I'm not going to lie. Some of them you're going to look at them and say, man, I don't even understand how you got from step A to step B. But sometimes you just have to kind of mess around and figure it out yourself, or keep looking to see if there's some other videos that may be a little bit more step by step. But most of the time, the problem that you're having, hundreds or thousands of other people have also had, and there are instructions as to how to fix that, what the parts are, where to find those parts online. And even, especially something like a hoverboard or a dishwasher or a washing machine, you may not know how to disassemble them. And yes, they can be very confusing. And even I don't know most of the time exactly how to get some of these things apart. But if you go out to YouTube, you'll find, especially for major devices, you'll find some really good guides as to how to disassemble and reassemble those parts. And most of the time, it's not that complicated. It doesn't require any special tools. But this also kind of came up here. I'm just going to talk about three of the most recent things that I fixed here. And this really only goes back maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks at the most. But just to give you an idea, I do fix a lot of things, and a lot of people just kind of say, hey, could you fix this? What do you know about this? So as I was thinking about this episode, I was thinking back, well, what were the last three things that I fixed? And honestly, these are things that I fixed within the last week or two, because I do tend to fix quite a few things. My garage and workspace is filled with partially disassembled and in the process of being fixed products. But the last three things that I fixed, one, and I actually just wrapped this project up here earlier this morning before I started the podcast, is a portable ice maker. So I'm a board member out at Zeal Center for Entrepreneurship, which is a co-working space, and my son was interning out there earlier this year, and they had a little portable ice maker. And it's actually a really neat device. I didn't know anything about this until I started messing around with it, how it worked or anything, but it's a small device, sits on the counter. You literally pour water in the base of it, and it pumps the water up into the top in a little tray. It's got these little electrode or little things that stick into the water that freeze, pump coolant through it, and create these little kind of ice cubes. And then it dumps them out, and it only takes maybe 10 minutes to create a dozen ice cubes. And it's meant to just be something that's very fast, and then it dumps those ice cubes out. Well, they'd used it for a long time, and I noticed a while ago that it was just sitting there unplugged, didn't think much about it. Well, part of the internship, they were just kind of cleaning stuff up, and the one guy said, well, told my son to just throw that in the dumpster. My son knows better than that. He sent me a message. He says, hey, they're pitching this. Do you want it? And I said, yep, go put it in the truck. And so he put that in the truck, and I brought it home, took it apart, and it was a very, very, very simple fix. There's a basket basin thing at the top that holds the water. Well, it cracked. And the gear that would turn that in order to dump the ice out and then turn it back so that it could fill back up was just cracked. The little plastic piece broke on it and it no longer turned. So it wouldn't rotate up and down. It would never trigger the limit switches. So took this particular fix had two things. One, it was really hard to get that thing apart. It was not obvious how that came apart. I eventually figured it out. But the second thing was is that it was not obvious where to get that new part. I looked all over the place and couldn't find it. I eventually had to send a message to the manufacturer, and they did get back to me almost immediately and said, yep, it's this particular part number, and you can order it right here. And so I went back to their website with their secret part number and was able to order it. It was $20 plus shipping, and they shipped it out about 5 days. I had the part. And I just put that all back together this morning, or last night, I guess. And then I was testing it out this morning, and everything works perfect. So here's a device that costs about $200. They still make them. It's not even that old. It was about ready to be thrown into the dumpster because of a $20 part. Now it works perfectly fine. It'll probably work for a year before it breaks again. Based on my own checking online, this is a part in a common problem that they have where the gear and the plastic device meet. They just simply don't have enough plastic there. And after a while, it kind of wears out and snaps. But again, I saved quite a bit of material going into the landfill or the recycle because of that. And now we've got our $200 ice maker back in action. The next thing that I fixed, this was last weekend, and it took me a better part of a couple of hours to get it fixed. But I had a printer that somebody was throwing out, and they said, well, I can't get it to print. And it was an old inkjet printer, a really nice inkjet printer, though. And I did look it up, and it was 14 years old. So it's definitely on the end of the life cycle of where somebody would really want a printer like this. So I did some poking around. Obviously, the ink was completely dried out in it. I could buy 20 ink cartridges for $11 off Amazon. So I ordered some and put them in and tried to print it. And it just didn't print, and it wouldn't print. And so I ended up taking it all apart and investigating. And what turned out to happen is that this particular printer runs the ink out of the cartridge through a long tube before it gets to the printer head. Well, it had just dried out because I'm sure this printer had been sitting unused for a couple of years, maybe even longer. Like I said, it was 14 years old, so it could have been sitting in a closet for 10 years. I have no idea. Well, that ink had all dried out. Well, I knew that if we ran on all these inkjets, they have the clean head setting, or the clean head option, where it'll essentially force ink through the device over and over again in order to clean that head out, because that head will get dried out. Well, I knew if I ran that, we would eventually get it to cycle the ink all the way through. And I probably had to run that 20 to 30 times. And I had to run it for each of the four colors, and some of them started printing a lot earlier than the others. But it's not anything complicated. I mean, literally anybody could have done that. They could have put the ink in, and if they just would have known to push that button 20 to 30 times, they would have been able to cycle that ink through and get this printer to print. In the end, it ended up printing perfectly. In fact, I think it's actually printing better than my standard inkjet printer that I use on a regular basis. So now I've got a perfectly good printer. I don't know what I'm going to do with it because it doesn't have a whole lot of value. Somebody's not going to pay $100 for a 14-year-old printer. And this is another thing that most people don't know about printers. In almost all of them, you can go in and print a status page, and it'll tell you exactly how many prints that printer has ever printed in its lifetime. And this one was a printer fax scanner, so it had all of those numbers. Well, including my test prints, which were probably 20 to 30 over the afternoon that I was messing around with it, when I finally got the ink to print, I printed that status page, and it said it had printed 114 pages in its lifetime. So here's a printer that virtually never got used, somewhere between 50 and 75 prints ever in its lifetime before it got put in a closet somewhere and then resurfaced back to me. So now this is a printer that has printed in its entire lifetime less than 100 pages that was going to go into the dumpster and going to get pitched out. Now, this one also is a very high quality printer. This will be as good a quality as any of the commercial inkjet printers that are on the market today. It actually had a resolution of 6,000 by 1,200 DPI, which is really high for an inkjet printer. And the prints that I tested on it turned out to be perfect. I mean, it really does great. So now I've got a printer that works flawlessly. The ink is extremely inexpensive, and it would make a great printer for someone. I just need to find somebody that needs a color inkjet printer. for their office. So, and then we'll get it back in and we'll save that one from being thrown out and recycled. So the last one I'll mention is over the last month or so, I'm moving offices and I've got a bunch of old computers. And these aren't necessarily old, don't work anymore or need to be thrown out. They're just ones that we don't use anymore. They've been cycled out and a lot of times they just get put in the back room and I've got a whole bunch of monitors for them as well. So over the last few weeks, I've just slowly been reinstalling Windows, re-updating all of these machines. A few of them did have a few problems with them. And I always do things like blow the dirt and dust out of the fans, swap out memory. If I've got some extra memory, I can increase memory on the computers, or if the hard drives have been pulled. And inevitably, I'll salvage some of these for parts. So a few of them didn't have power supplies that needed to be put back in and those types of things. But now I've got about, I think there's 7 or 8 computers that are perfectly good computers. I mean, these computers that will easily play Minecraft and Fortnite and would be a great joy for some kids to have if they don't currently have a computer, that are now, again, they would normally have been sent to the recycle place. It would have been disassembled, ground up for parts, and melted down. But now we're going to put them back out. We're going to get them back out into some kids that maybe don't have computers, could use a computer, and start to learn and just have an opportunity that they wouldn't have had otherwise. So I've got a few hours into these. We'll likely end up donating them to kids or families that don't have any computers, and hopefully we'll continue to have them build and create . And there'll be future engineers and future technology folks in the field, all just because I didn't want to throw these old computers out. And that's something that really, honestly, anybody can do. Anybody can download Windows and reinstall it, but most people don't. They just pitch them. And I do think it's a little bit of a shame that a lot of these things are getting recycled. And a lot of times, the things I fix, I don't even need or want in the end. And they do end up getting donated to people or nonprofits that I know in town. I took about 3 monitors over to a local nonprofit that I work with. We're using old 14-inch square Dell monitors, just horrible resolution. I had a bunch of ones that we're never going to use again. They're 22-inch HD 1080p monitors. I mean, I don't have any use for them, but they're perfectly good. So we swapped out all of their monitors and now they're super happy. But again, that's stuff that most businesses probably would have just pitched. And then sometimes if it's something that may have a little bit more value, I'll try to kick it up on Craigslist and sell it. Although honestly, dealing with people through Craigslist sometimes isn't even worth the trouble. Sometimes it's easier to just donate them to a nonprofit or just post something up and say, hey, if you know anybody that needs X, I've got one I'd be happy to donate to. But anyway, I try to do my part on getting these things refixed and refurbished and back into the community. So a few awesome takeaways, I think, for today's episode. This is something most people don't know, but whatever your problem is that's broken on electronics or appliance, there's probably hundreds or thousands of others that have the exact same problem. Go ahead and go out, do a YouTube search on your product, your problem. You'd be surprised at what you find. And some of these things are so obscure, you think there's no way that's ever happening. So I'll just give you one really quick example. So I've got a late model F-150 pickup truck, and the LED for the odometer kind of flickers in and out. So sometimes you look down, there'll be no odometer reading, and then 10 minutes later, it'll pop back on and might be good for an hour or day or a week. Doesn't really matter, but it does flicker off and on. Well, this is actually a known problem in many, many years of the F-150. Well, if you go look that problem up on YouTube, you'll see that there's hundreds of videos explaining what the problem is. And it's right back to there's a broken solder joint on the back of that LED. Again, something that may be beyond most of the listeners here today to fix. But it is something that, hey, if you're interested, here's a very thorough walkthrough, a 20-minute video on YouTube that will tell you exactly which screws to take apart, exactly what to look for, how to not break the part taking it out, and which leads need to be soldered back on. So if you've got a little bit of patience and some ability to run a soldering iron and want to go ahead and tackle that problem yourself, there's a complete step-by-step guide. So it doesn't matter how obscure you think your problem is, there's a really good chance that there's a whole bunch of people experiencing the same thing. Now, as always, I mean, take caution when you're fixing things. If it's a high voltage item, you need to be a little bit careful. You don't want to get shocked, or at least you don't want to get shocked that bad or that many times. You probably only want to do it once, and then you might learn your lesson on that. But honestly, don't hesitate to take something apart and start to explore. If you have concerns about safety and whether or not it would be a high voltage item, those are all going to be very thoroughly labeled and explained on any of those YouTube videos. And I mentioned YouTube quite a bit, but honestly, that's your number one go-to when it comes to fixing and repairing items. The other thing that people don't probably know about is that Amazon and a lot of their resellers sell parts. I am amazed at how often I've got an obscure part that I think there's no way Amazon's going to sell this. And I type the part number in. Sure enough, one of the resellers has it. This just happened a couple weeks ago. One of the back wheels on the lawnmower is cracked. And I thought, well, that's going to be expensive because I got to get it from Sears and the shipping is going to be more than the part. Well, I looked it up on Amazon. There's two or three people that sell that exact part. And in some cases, they're shipping, and in other cases, there isn't. But nonetheless, for $30, I can get the part delivered, which is, again, something you wouldn't think you could buy from Amazon. The last little thing I'll leave you with is a website called Repair Clinic, repairclinic.com. I'll list that in the show notes. If you're dealing with appliances, and this would include some things beyond appliances, but it's mostly appliances, they've got an amazing website. You type in your model or your part number that you're looking for, and they'll have a lot of information about the disassembly, the reassembly, which parts you'll need. The other thing that they do, which I think is super cool, if you've got maybe a washing machine and you're looking to replace this one particular part, maybe it's the clutch, they're going to list and they're going to say, hey, other people that have replaced this clutch have also replaced this other part at about the same time. And they'll recommend, you know, hey, maybe buy both of these parts since you've already got it disassembled. And you should probably take that advice because if the clutch is going, there's a really good chance that this belt should also be replaced at the exact same time. Because the last thing you want to do is get it all put back together and then a week or a month later, find out you got to go back and replace that other part. You can save yourself a tremendous amount of time. So I'd highly recommend taking a look at Repair Clinic. And also, their website does have a lot of really good high quality videos. And if, or especially around appliances. So if you're confused or you don't even know what your problem is, they'll list videos of the most common problems with each of those products. So for example, maybe you've got a symptom with your dryer not turning off when it's supposed to. Well, if you type in your model number, there's a really good chance that they're going to have a video and say, well, if this is your problem, here's probably the solution. And then you can take a look at that. And usually they'll have some suggestions as to diagnosing the problem as well so that you can be pretty confident that that's your problem before you order the parts. Well, that's all I've got for you today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Go ahead and go out and maybe repair something that you have laying in your garage that's broken. Thanks for joining me today. If you have not left a review over on Apple, we'd love to have you swing over there and give us a big 5 stars. It really does help. And as always, you can join the conversation on our Facebook page. Just search for Go Hack Something and we'll pop right up. To subscribe, head over to wherever you get your podcasts or go to gohacksomething.com and you'll find all of the links. Thank you. Go hack something. Oh, and go fix something.